Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 461, Science Faction's Polynesians Getting Around.
You follow my erotica series? I mean, I self-publish.
Two Girls, One Coconut?
Yes, and that was actually the title of chapter 4.
Yeah.
But that's beside the point.
It's also one of the examples of why punctuation is so important, because two girls, and one coconut, !
That actually sounds extremely refreshing had the horror pornography that preceded it 10 years before never occurred, because a Polynesian three-way and then relaxing with a coconut, that sounds awesome. That sounds like something that, like, the skipper would have done in real life.
I mean, let's not skip over the elephant in the room here, which is the dramatic underrepresentation of the Polynesian community in American porn. I mean, it would be hard to find a specific ethnic group. People say this about Asian people, but you can certainly find a lot more Asian porn than Samoan porn. And so, like, there is a serious racism issue when it comes to American pornography and Pacific Islanders. And so,
maybe we're not sending porn recruiters out to American Samoa. Maybe that's the problem. We're only sending NFL recruiters.
You want to see a representation of yourself to have something to strive for as a young person. And there is not, you know, even when they say, like, oh, there's not a lot of Asian people in porn, but then they got to look up to, you know, superstars like Tia Carrera and stuff that ended up being really popular in porn. And so, you know, there were role models.
Tia Carrera was in porn? I think, like, you just slandered Tia Carrera.
Asia Carrera is the Tia Carrera porn knockoff, who became very big in porn and arguably bigger than Tia Carrera.
Asia Carrera, I discovered her in middle school and
she broke down a lot of barriers.
Really? I mean, like, I found myself masturbating to somebody as a different race and feeling woke as an eighth grader.
Yes, absolutely. That's like a really twisted version of Hands Across America, but they're not grasping other hands. That's the other part of it. But yes, there is absolutely discrimination against Polynesians in porn. It's called the thatched ceiling can't break through.
It's hot. Fuck you.
And speaking of thatched ceiling, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy, and with me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, we had a long intro on that one. I didn't know that one was going to go so far. We just wanted to keep volleying that one back and forth, huh?
We haven't talked about Polynesians in a while. I think, like, we had a lot of stuff to get off our chest, you know, like...
You know what I like about us is we're smart with our racism, you know? We're like, hey, who should we pick on? Well, the pygmies, right? Let's pick... Because those guys, they're not going to fight back that bad, you know? They're far away, and even if they did fight back, we could take, like, five of them, so, like, not a big deal, right? But, like, usually when we get together in our pre-show meetings and discuss who we're going to be racist against, the bottom of that list is Polynesians, because there's a bunch of them where we live, and they're much larger than we are and scarier. So usually they're at the bottom of the racism list.
Yeah, and they got a chip on their shoulder, too. Ever since not getting an NFL contract, you know, they got some aggression that needs to be taken out.
Yes, it's actually numerous chocolate chips. They eat a lot of desserts.
Hey, those two white dudes are recording a science podcast in our neighborhood. And they've been super racist against our culture. Let's get them, guys.
Anyway, thank you, audience, for tuning back into Science Faction. Thank you if you happen to come on out to Nerd Night's digital July night. That was a blast to be back doing that again. We're going to be doing August as well, so come on out to that a little bit later.
Did any super fans show up? Did they ask interesting questions?
They could have. I don't pay attention
because
to the
Because they
show.
Went to a live show. Like, essentially, what, like, when you do a Nerd Night...
Yeah.
For fans, like, essentially, like, they got the album. They get the album. It's released every Sunday on their iPhone. But they wanted to go to the live show.
Yeah.
And do you suck live?
No, I'm doing a lot of tap dancing during the show, so I'm not reading, like, the chat streams and stuff. And so I'm unaware. Maybe there were, maybe there weren't. I sent a few names in, so hopefully they got on that list.
You basically just told me it was terrible because I know you. You're a terrible tap dancer.
Yes.
So if you were tap dancing in lieu of responding to people and teaching science, if this was essentially a tap dance show, I'd like to apologize to our Science Faction fans.
Except you forget this was right after 4th of July, in which case I did my whole sparkle tassels routine.
Oh, that's right. How do you get it to spin on your penis so well? The lights and everything? It's impressive.
I have this move called Marine One. And this is where I load up the president.
And I'll tell you again, You're stealing valor every time you do that.
Now, every once in a while, I mess up the Marine one, and then I have a move called the Jack Ryan.
You mention Harrison Ford a lot.
Yeah, it's where I yell at the whoever's in the room, get the hell off my penis.
And Gary Oldman leaves the room.
Anybody who loves movies from 25 years ago is going to love that reference.
I am surprised that is not the staple Patriot movie that has a conservative president, warmongering president,
who's literally kicking ass, punching dudes in the face on the plane, yelling at them to get off his plane.
I have to imagine that by not electing John McCain, we said that this would happen. Like, we negated this from happening in history. Because had John McCain been elected president,
he would have
killed Gary Oldman.
Okay. And that would have stopped World War III.
But it would have happened at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and it would have been very inappropriate. You want to make fun of my time overseas, do you, Goldman?
It took him 6.5 minutes, and no one even tried to intervene. Gary was begging for his life. All right, let's move right on to science. Articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, article number one, the nail in the coffin for Polynesians banging Native Americans. Or is it?
I need to know. It'll affect a lot of my porn storylines in the future. You know, I'm following a young sexual Polynesian man as he sails and explores different lands and bangs different cultures. And I'm pretty woke in that I didn't use a Viking for this.
I wonder if I could get like a daily rate and a producer credit if I could be the anthropological fact checker on a prehistoric based porn movie.
Yeah, I would love to see a porn movie that, like, a porn title, like, most historically accurate porn parody title.
Yeah, yeah.
Like at the AVNs.
Yeah, because every time they do, like, a prehistoric porn, it's always, like, you look like Barney Rubble. There's a dude with, like, the cheetah skin and the big club that comes walking in. And, like I could do a more accurate and arguably much more terrifying porn just based on what was almost certainly happening in the prehistoric period.
I think it'd be funny if, like, you were super historically accurate. I mean, insanely historically accurate. Like, you go over and, like, smell under this dude's balls. Like, nope, that is not a natural flora.
Uh-uh.
Not at all.
No, I need you to go sit in the forest for a week or two, and then you could come talk to me.
Also, why are you going downtown? That did not happen back in the day. Let me assure you, that did not happen.
Absolutely not by choice. No.
Missionary was not even a thing that happened because people didn't want to smell each other's breath during coitus.
So anyway, those of you guys who have listened to the show before know that one of the things I've talked about a bunch is pre-Columbian contact. It's something that I find super, super interesting.
That's America before cocaine. That's like code for America pre the drug war.
This is like 1972, 1973, right before things took off.
Right before Johnny Depp started dealing a lot of cocaine.
Yeah. Pre-Columbian contact is literally just the pre-Columbian before Columbus contact of the old world with the new world in some form or another. Now, we do know that this did absolutely happen, at least one instance. We know that the Vikings in about the mid-11th century came to the east coast of Canada. They established a little settlement. They didn't stay too long. They took off.
Well, they were murdered.
Well, no. Some were murdered, and then some sailed away, and then they sailed back to Greenland, and then they never really came back, or maybe occasionally ventured over for timber. It's not quite sure, but didn't really contribute to the local genome or population or start a culture there or anything. They visited, and they took off. Now,
they didn't ejaculate any toilet seats. Gotcha.
Not that we can. They didn't pull what we call a Jefferson.
The Vikings had a lot of wide stances in the rest stops in Nova Scotia.
Yeah, a Jefferson is when you have illegitimate children with like a different group that is socially unacceptable at your time period for you to be having illegitimate children with. Not to be confused with a Jefferson airplane, which is just when you have a sweet-ass mustache.
Oh, I thought you were talking about moving on up. Also, let's not forget that there was also a whole, like, slave situation. It was, like, because, like, I could almost forgive, like, the, hey, I met this attractive young lady in the woods, and turns out we had this improbable romance. That's a lot different than the Jefferson thing.
Yes.
Like, that's, like let's not equate the two.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know how much, like, just meeting people in the woods there was. I don't know if that's how people, like, I don't know if you're just going through the woods, you're like, hey, look, what are you doing in the woods? I'm just, you know, being in the woods. How about you? Me too. Let's bang.
I'm calling it right now. If time machine technology comes out during our lifetime, put $20 on it. I'm saying this.
Okay.
We go back to Viking times. Uh-huh. Dress me up as a Viking.
Yes.
You have me wandering in the woods with my raw sexuality.
Uh-huh.
If I were to stumble upon some lovely Native American lady, there is a good chance she would find me too irresistible. And I would activate something deep within her. Otherwise, what has my erotica writing career been about?
I do like the idea that you might activate something deep within her that she can't control, and she sees you and just immediately slits her own throat. Just like, it's not worth it.
It's like, this is a devil. Nothing. I've never seen something so unattractive.
But one of the more interesting possible pre-Columbian contacts is the idea that Polynesians made it over to the west coast of South America sometime around actually the same time that the Vikings were there, about 1,000 years ago, maybe give or take 100, 200 years. Now, there's some interesting evidence for this. We know that the Polynesians made it to very remote islands, not only Hawaii, but Easter Island, Rapa Nui, which is, you know, thousands of miles away from where they left from. And yet,
and only exists in April.
Well, yes, true. The great thing about it, though, is it has a year-long supply of Cadbury cream eggs, so it balances out.
You know, that seems like one of those things, like, how could a civilization survive when their primary crop is Cadbury cream eggs? It sounds sweet at first.
Yes, it's great.
It sounds very sweet at first. But then you'd wish it was a Reese's peanut butter cup.
No, never. You would just be hollowing them out and using them as little cups for water. It'll be great.
Better for sailing.
So they occupied Easter Island, which is much closer to South America than anything else. And it's this tiny little island. So if they occupied that tiny little island, you know, thousands of miles away, chances are they went by that island a few times and hit this massive continent that was sitting behind it. So there was a few little tidbits, not only that, but some actual tidbits of information, a few. So one, it looks like a crop from South America, the sweet potato, made it through Polynesia in pre-Columbian times. Now, there's some dispute about this because later there were, you know, voyagers, European voyagers, guys like Captain Cook who went through and they spread, you know, a bunch of sweet potatoes around. So there's this thought that maybe that was post-Columbian contact.
Johnny sweet potato seed.
Yeah, there's some evidence, including the fact that those might be separate species of sweet potato and a few other things that suggest that actually the sweet potato was spread in pre-Columbian times. That would require somebody to spread it. So either people from South America going over to Polynesia or people from Polynesia coming to South America and going back. Another instance is some very tantalizing clues of possible chicken bones pre-Columbian on the western coast of South America. Again, the chicken is native to Southeast Asia, so it would not be in the Americas at that point unless somebody brought it there. And it was domesticated after humans came, so somebody would have to bring it there, you know, after the people made it to that continent. And it looks like there might be some chicken bones indicating some interchange with the Polynesians there. There's also a similar word. The word that the Polynesians have for sweet potato is actually very similar to the Andean, the Quechua word.
God damn! It's weird. It means it in every language. It's one of those.
Now, an article came out today that was basically like, hey, guess what? We discovered something amazing. We discovered some South Americans went over to some Polynesian islands and they mated with those people. And so it means
murdered them.
Means the South American natives were ocean-going seafarers, which we had never thought before, et cetera, et cetera. A few problems with this. Number one, this isn't necessarily new news. One of the things we covered a few years ago was the first time we found traces of South American DNA in Polynesians from Rapa Nui or Easter Island. So we knew that that was there, and we had already assumed that the Polynesians had made it to South America and then brought somebody back with them. All this does is clarify that, yes, some kind of interchange happened, and where it happened, which was actually not on Easter Island. They looked at a bunch of different surrounding islands, a bunch of different surrounding groups, and they actually found out that it was in like the southern Marquesas Islands, which is nearby. And over about a 200-year period of time, that DNA, which came from somebody from South America, originated in one of those islands up there, made its way as the Polynesians who carried it made their way through the different populations. It made its way through the different islands, and after, you know, a few hundred years ended up all the way on Easter Island. And that is how that DNA got there. So it's more of a more detailed explanation of how a specific genetic thing we already knew about got there, even though that is not what the story is telling you about it will say. But what's more interesting is when we start talking about what does this mean? Now, we know this happened about 1,000 years ago. So it was right around that time we were talking about. And that's 1,800 years ago is about when Easter Island was occupied anyway. Let's talk about the different implications of this. Like, what are the different possibilities that could have led to this particular outcome? Okay, so number one, a person or group of people from South America, natives from South America 1,000 years ago, by the way, the DNA suggests the Columbia area, at least that's where the modern descendants live, made their way out on floating craft and either intentionally or unintentionally left the mainland and somehow made it very, 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 very far out into the Pacific and survived. Now, this seems somewhat unlikely to me because we don't know these people to have strong ocean-going heritages. However, there is some indication from things like Chumash-like boats and stuff that some of the natives along the west coast of the Americas did have some advanced maritime technology, not as advanced as the Polynesians. It is possible they can make it out to one of these islands, but you're talking about thousands of miles.
Like an October sky situation. Like, we're talking a young native South American, native Colombian, who just believed he could. He saw islands off the coast of Colombia.
Cannot see it thousands of miles away. It'd be like seeing across the United States.
He saw him.
Okay.
He saw him because the earth is flat.
All right. Well,
there is no curvature.
Fair enough.
He saw Hawaii.
So they made their way out there and somehow found these islands. That seems highly unlikely to me. Another scenario that I think is more likely is that a group of Polynesians made it to the mainland of South America, and then they went back to one of those islands, bringing with them either a voluntary person who has joined their group as a wife or something else, or a husband or something, or a slave that they have stolen and they're bringing back. It looks like there's maybe only one admixture. We're not 100% sure.
I prefer to think of it like an Indiana Jones-esque sidekick, like a kid sidekick you saved from the streets of Hong Kong.
Well, that kid sidekick has to mate with somebody in the end, some Polynesians, in order to get their DNA spread throughout the Polynesians.
Oh, he will. Like, I'll raise him to be a badass like me.
Yeah, okay, so if he is like an Indiana Jones-style sidekick, Short Round was his name. If he was like Short Round, it's Short Round, but Indy gets Short Round late at the end?
I would, at his 18th birthday, I'm sorry, yeah. 13th birthday, like a man. Yeah, absolutely.
Very, very interesting stuff. I love this area of study. I love kind of illuminating these very ancient contacts that we didn't know happened that probably would have gotten lost to time because there was no one there to write it down or to describe it, but a mixture of archaeology and genetics brings it out. Super, super interesting. We're narrowing down on this Polynesian-South American interchange, and it might answer a few other questions that we have in terms of the genetics of South America. Very, very cool stuff. All right, on to article number two, checkpoint blockers.
Is this the new term for cock blockers? Like, if I were to call somebody a cock blocker at work, that's obviously an NSW term.
Yes.
But if I say checkpoint blocker, like, does that work?
I think it's more like, you know how they have, like, DUI checkpoints and stuff? If you're a dude who's like a militant libertarian and he's super against him, so he like drives a stolen flatbed truck across the freeway to block it so that the points cannot actually be accessed, and he considers himself a checkpoint blocker.
Blow up the bridge, dude.
Yeah, I guess so.
Go McVeigh on that bridge.
All right, so what is a checkpoint blocker? It is a drug that takes the limiters off of our immune system, like a shady garage that'll illegally boost the horsepower of your Honda Civic. The checkpoint blockers essentially are able to remove some inherent restrictions that are already on your immune system. So you might go like, wait, why the fuck do I need restrictions on my immune? Like, is the EPA regulating the fuel efficiency of my immune system and it can't exceed a certain amount?
My mom and dad are such assholes. They keep putting restrictions on my immune system. That's why I caught AIDS.
Remember, when we talk about things like the 1918 flu pandemic, a lot of times people were dying from that cascade of effects where your immune system overreacts to an infection. So in that case, you actually died from an overreaction of your immune system. So having an immune system with the brakes ripped completely off isn't a great idea. It can kill you almost as much as not having any immune system at all. So these checks are necessary. But what we realize is that certain times, a drug, a checkpoint blocker that can pull that back, that can take the brakes off a little bit, the natural brakes, can allow either itself, the immune system, or a separate drug to work much better. So these checkpoint blockers can be really effective. Certain cancers, checkpoint blockers can work really, really well, meaning once you take the brakes off the immune system can attack the cancer and kill it, and we're fine. But it's weird, because it's only certain cancers, and also certain people. Certain people, checkpoint blockers work fantastic, and other people, it doesn't work at all, and we don't know why. So one of this research wanted to look at is a possible interaction with an immune cell population called myeloid-derived suppressor cells, or MDSC. And these things basically slow down certain immune functions, and we find them a lot in cancer patients. So bad cancer patients tend to have a lot of these MDSCs around, and we think those things might be putting the brakes on our immune system. So the researchers thought, let's try it. These things are probably inhibiting some of the stuff we're trying to do. Let's use this thing called a BIRD4 inhibitor. And that protein, BIRD4, it regulates different activities, including some that promote MDSCs. So the idea was you give BIRD4 inhibitors, you knock out those MDSCs and see what happens. So they did that in a group of mice with a type of cancer that was usually resistant to checkpoint blockers. And once they knocked out the BIRD4, and all of a sudden the checkpoint blockers worked on this kind of cancer. Now, this is a lot of technical jargon. Let's just say it this way. Imagine you have a gun, and this gun can kill like 10% of cancers, right? So there's like, you're a cancer hunter, you've got this gun, because of the different thicknesses of skin and how far away you have to shoot different cancers, it can kill 10% of cancers. You're excited about that because it kills 10%, but it's only 10%.
That's what I've been telling my liberal friends. That's why I need to carry a gun in case your cancer ever threatens my friend's life. I need a 10% chance of killing that cancer and a 90% chance of executing my friend.
Yeah, I would like to see like somebody take the war on cancer too far and just start shooting up chemo centers.
I'm sorry, sleep, sweet prince. You're a carrier of this dark disease.
I mean, technically, if the person dies, the cancer will die. That's just a fact.
I will go scorched earth on my enemy, which is cancer.
So you're hunting cancers. You got this great gun. It can shoot 10% of cancers. You're psyched about that, but you'd like to see more. All of a sudden, what you find out is if you combine this gun with a special kind of scope that you didn't know you had to you could use, but it was around, you just never knew you could use it, you attach this scope on, and now it's possible, because we don't know what this number is now, we're just seeing it working on cancers that previously were in that bigger 90% group, now some much larger percentage, let's say maybe 20%, maybe 80%, but some huge percentage of cancers can now be killed with this gun you have. That's really neat, because we've essentially opened up treatment options to huge swaths of people who before did not have this as an option because it did not fit the very narrow group of cancers that could be affected by these checkpoint blockers. With this BIRD4 inhibitor, if we can all of a sudden make these checkpoint blockers more universal for cancers, we might be able to take a lot of cancer death off the table.
I look at it more like you're giving these drugs a silencer. They can just do more and remain undetected. You know, they're silent agents.
They don't really work on some cancers at all without the BIRD4 inhibitors. So like, it's a silencer, but it's the type of gun that can't work without the silencers.
But if you hit them really hard with it, damn. It's not quiet at all, actually. It's pretty loud.
Very, very cool. We'll see what happens. We're not sure if this is going to end up becoming a new, very popular cancer treatment or just one tool that it currently is a tool in immunocancer treatments, and whether or not we'll see this become a much bigger tool as now we can use it for many, many more cancers. All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 461, where you learned all about Polynesians banging Native Americans. And how checkpoint blockers might be the cancer treatment of the future. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back later this week for Science Faction 462.
I swear to God, if you don't get me something better than this goddamn sweet potato after I gave you that sweet chicken, I'm taking one of you as a slave.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.